Just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. But the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her till today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart.
It's a Friday night, and you've been good enough to join us. We welcome you on board. My name is Maurice. As you know, you can always call me Mo. And, of course, we've got Eliza Jane with us. Eliza Jane, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mo. Thanks for the introduction. And we have a great guest tonight. I'm really excited about talking to her and talking with her about all these great articles she writes. So let's kick this show off, eh?
Hey, I like that. Hey, that's, we will do that. And our guest, of course, is Tabitha Coral. And we're going to have a topic. We want you to really focus on the title, Festering Evil, Satan's Sharia. We're going to really talk about evil tonight, and we're going to invite Tabitha to speak with us with her own words. We're going to invite you to listen to the words, but we want you to think as you're listening, to think about the evil. And we'll give you a little bit of background and bring Tabitha in. Tabitha had a life as a mother and an employee in the business world, and then basically kind of sort of retired and found out that she could write well. And she actually is an author of several books, including Confronting the Deception, which is available on Amazon. She began her political writing with letters to the editor after retirement, and she actually has earned awards, including a prestigious award from the Committee on Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, which is CAMRA, for her work. So, Tabitha, good evening. Welcome to Sharia Crime Stoppers Action Line.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're very happy to do that. We're going to invite Tabitha to speak to us through her articles. And we've, with Tabitha, Eliza Jane, and I have selected an article to start with. The article is entitled, I Take This Woman, A tagline might be, the religion of peace offers no peace to women at any time. Tabitha, before we jump into the article, maybe you can just bring us up to speed. Give us a little bit more detail about how you got into writing on this particular subject and why you continue to focus on Sharia, Sharia crime, the life of people who live under Sharia.
Sure. It began with 9/11. And even though I was already in the Midwest by then, I felt that everybody that we lost on 9/11 in New York was family for me. And I started reading falsehoods, propaganda, and I began writing back to the newspapers and giving my own opinion and what I believed to be the truth. The more I read, the more I learned, the more I could write, and soon it was just the little letters to the editor didn't do me justice, so I started with essays, and that's how it progressed.
And maybe just give us a remind us the book that is out now that's available. Maybe just remind us, Confronting the Deception. Just give us kind of an overview of what that is. I think the articles you're going to read tonight are related, or maybe even contained in that. Just give us an overview of Confronting the Deception, and then we'll move on to the first article.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, I was a traumatized American, and I began writing about the mosque that Abdul Rauf demanded, which was going to be called the Cordoba Center. And it was going to be built on sacred ground, which was still being covered by plane parts and body parts. And I knew, as I said, I had to speak out. And the more I learned about Islam, the more I realized what a dangerous political ideology it is, and that it came to our country. It's certainly in Europe far more than it is with us, but it's coming. It has to worsen if we don't stop it. So there seems to be a serious blind spot in our country and all over that they just want to do the right thing with multiculturalism, but we cannot have multiculturalism. We can have multi-racism, multi-races, multi-personalities, but not culture. In America, we have to have the American culture. If we give it up, then we will be conquered by Islam. And
very simple, very straight.
Okay.
Clear. That was good. Eliza Jane, do you have any other introduction, or want to just jump in?
Just a quick comment. You very well said, Tabitha. Very well said. And I like how you address this, because so many people want to call it a religion, but you literally named it. You called it dangerous political ideology. If more people started to use those words,
correct,
I think we would have just one more step in terms of the right direction to be able to address this and defeat it. You are absolutely right.
In most religions, God tells us to do the right thing, to honor people. Only in Islam does it tell you to kill people. That's not
That's
a religion.
Right. That's right. You're absolutely right. One last question. Were you in New York during 9/11?
No, I was already here, but my
okay.
coworker and her cubby had the radio on, and I couldn't hear the radio, but I heard her strange sound. She had a sister in the second building who managed to make her way down because she couldn't fit into the elevator. It was full. But it touched me deeply. I
sure.
could have been there. I used to work in Manhattan. So it could have been me. It could have been anybody. And as far as I'm concerned, any American is a cousin of mine. I wasn't going to take any, you know, we're all related with a love of country, and we don't want it infringed upon by others.
Yeah. Well said. Well, you want to go ahead and kick off the first article?
I will. Thank you. Sure. I called it, I take this woman, the way I take this woman to be my lawful wedded wife, and that's how I got the title. The internet provides everything you'd want to know about courtships, weddings, married life, but few of them include the instructions on wife beating. There is a brief but enlightening film produced by Middle East Media Research Institute and posted on Jihad Watch, of a Muslim sociologist who demonstrates the proper wife-beating technique. Of course, the sociologist assures his audience that Islam is merciful and that the man, the head of the household, should not have to beat his wife every day, and to do so lightly, never to hit her face or head, bruise, break bones, or cause blood to flow. But the cautionary statement rings hollow when the wife's bruises will never be seen because she must be covered from head to toe. And should she become inured to the disciplined sameness, there are other means of control and punishment available to him, all sanctioned by the religion of peace. When is it necessary to beat one's wife? The sociologist posits that there are women who prefer domineering, authoritative, and even violent husbands. For the most part, however, beatings are needed when the wife has disobeyed him and the strict Islamic rules of marriage. She may have refused to wear a hijab or the finery he chose for her, or fancied attending school with the hope of one day having a career and earning a wage. She may have wanted to leave the house unaccompanied or without her husband's permission. She is literally under house arrest. The Sharia marriage contract contains her virginity status, the dowry amount, and grants sexual intercourse rights to the male, giving him total control over his wife or wives. Should she refuse his advances, be too ill or too young to have sex, or if she engaged in sex with another man or was raped, he could stop her daily financial maintenance. The woman is considered a she-devil, equal to a domestic animal, harmful and with crooked character. Therefore, he may disallow her to sleep in his bed or lock her in a room naked and without food. Should he choose to enact a simple divorce by repeating, "I divorce you," three times, she may receive no more than 3 months' maintenance and could lose her children older than age 7. The Muslim husband has the right to accuse her of adultery, in which case he can gather his friends and neighbors together to bury her almost up to her shoulders and stone her to death. The film, The Stoning of Saraya M., which I recommend highly, portrays the true story of Saraya in Iran, whose husband Ali convinced their two sons and the townsfolk that she was committing adultery so that he could marry a 14-year-old girl. The internet has an actual film of a Syrian woman being stoned to death by ISIS. About 4 women per day are murdered in stove bursts in Pakistan by husbands or in-laws who claim the wives' scarves caught fire while they were cooking. We are assured, however, that the discipline of beating, although necessary, is done out of love, and once that's done, life can move on. But where does a sociologist get the concept of love? It's not in the Quran, which clearly stipulates that women are inferior and may be taken by force or bought from her parents. There is no Western-style courtship, no dating, no music or dancing under the stars, no dining in the candlelit cafe. In fact, there is no courtship whatsoever. Rather, a Sharia marriage is a document usually signed at the home of the future bride that grants sexual intercourse rights to the male with complete control over his wife or wives. Revered Muslim theologian Imam Ghazali defined marriage as a form of slavery. The woman is the man's slave, and her duty, therefore, is absolute obedience to the husband in all that he asks of her person. Interestingly, the marriage contract provides 4 blank spaces to be completed over time. Below the signature of wife number 1, there are 3 more signature lines for future wives, numbers 2, 3, and 4. The realization that there could be more than one wife with whom she would share her husband and home immediately negates love and devotion. The religious sanction of polygamy destroys the possibility of fidelity between one man and one woman, while also increasing rivalry, conflict, and stress. The marriage is unambiguous. You can be replaced. Not only does the man have the divine right to 4 wives, but also to pleasure marriages. Only he, not she, has the right to such dalliances, and only he, not she, has the right to divorce. He may even rid himself of the 4 he already has and begin anew with 4 wives plus slave wives. The Islamic woman is among the poorest and most oppressed in the world, and regardless of her financial station, she's caged for life. She cannot be rescued when beaten, and her husband has the right to not provide an explanation to anyone for beating her. For the Prophet has said, a man will not be asked as to why he beat his wife. This must be reassuring. Muslim societies are based on enslavement, the enslavement of society to the state ideology and women to men. The Saudi woman is always guilty, even if he breaks her ribs during a beating, and she is so victimized that denial of her situation is her only comfort. Muslim women are imprisoned for sexual crimes done by men, yet Islam insists it honors women. The indemnity for the death or injury of a woman is one half the indemnity paid for a man. In a Muslim society, the woman's virginity is the basis of the family's honor, and honor killings are acts of vengeance executed by like-minded family members against a family female member for reasons such as becoming too westernized, refusing an arranged marriage, being the victim of a sexual assault, seeking a divorce, or allegedly committing adultery. The mere perception that a woman has behaved in a dishonorable way is sufficient reason for murder. The methods include stoning, stabbing, beating, mutilation, burning, beheading, hanging, throat slashing, lethal acid attacks, shooting, and strangulation. If you could think of more, I'm sure they would use them. Women's advocacy groups suspect that more than 20,000 women are killed worldwide each year. The UK recorded 2,823 such crimes in 2010. Sex for the male in Islam is a plenteous buffet of alternatives, and he need never be indicted for adultery, pederasty, which is infant or youth pedophilia, rape, or honor killings. He even has permission to engage in sex with his wife's cadaver within 7 hours of her death. During a televised show in Egypt, Professor Sheikh Sabri Abdul Rayouf of the Islamic world's most prestigious madrasa was asked if it is permissible for a husband to penetrate his wife after death, and it's called necrophilia. He replied, "It is not favorable in Islam. However, Islamic law considers it as halal. It is permissible, not a crime or a sin deserving of punishment in the here or the hereafter. Men, particularly courageous jihadis, are rewarded with sex with perpetually exquisite virgin women, so that women are not just in competition and threatened by other women on earth, but also by supermodels in the afterlife. The religion of peace offers no peace to women at any time, not in infancy, not when they're genitally mutilated in childhood or married off against their will, and not in their adulthood, and not even after death. We must never allow Sharia law to overtake our American laws." Thank you.
Mm. Tabitha, this is so detailed, and couple of comments, if I could. And I think you wanted to read the acknowledgement as well, right?
Yes, I got a lot of this information from. Oh my goodness, I don't have it in front of me.
Noni Darwish's "Cruel and Unusual
Cruel and Unusual
Punishment," rather.
Correct, Noni Darwish. It's Darwish, right? Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. But the detail that you put into this, and for those of you that are just hearing it for the first time, when Tabitha is reading her article and referencing the Religion of Peace, it wasn't the Religion of Peace website. It was basically, you were sarcastically calling it Religion of Peace, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. I just want to make sure everybody, this is an article, folks, that you need to go out and read and share it with everybody, because And it's out on multiple websites. Gosh, you write for so many websites. When I was Googling your name, you just showed up everywhere. But you, for the most part, you've been writing, is it for the longest time? Would that be fair to say for Renew America?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there was another one who has since closed down. The woman retired, so I think Renew America is the one.
Okay. But folks, this really just qualifies what happens to a young girl. I mean, young all the way to possibly a baby being married and what they can do and what a man is allowed to do. And just from the standpoint of a wife after death.
Well, let me get back to the children for a minute. According, they're allowed to do whatever Muhammad did. He was considered the perfect man. So he took a bride at age 6, but waited till she was 9 before the marriage was consummated. That allows someone to marry at age 6 because he did it, so everybody else can too.
Because he's the prime example of what every man should follow. Sorry, Mo, go ahead.
I want to make this clear that I'm the imperfect Mo. I did not do those things, but I do think it's important for people to really dwell on this. Before we go on and pick up certain terms and ask for more detail, because the detail is terrifying, I actually want to go into detail, but I don't want to remind people that if you're struck by this, if you want to give us a call, remember you can call us at 319-527-6706, 319-527-6706, and if you push the number 1, we will recognize you. You'll be able to come on and ask your question or enter into the conversation. But let's go back to
May I add something, too? The articles in my book, the book has 822 end notes, meaning footnotes that are put at the end, so that if someone gets the book and looks at the back, they'll be able to do any kind of research that they want to pursue.
I want to make the comment that, Tabitha, I've been reading about this stuff for 3 or 4 years, learning all the time, but there are a couple of things that I did not know that you have in your article. By the way, Liza Jane, I think when we post the podcast, we could probably post links to the two articles that we're going to talk about tonight and maybe others.
Absolutely.
But there's a couple of things. There are links in the article that you can go learn more. So, for example, I'm not I did not particularly know what necrophilia is, and I think we've already explained that. This is having sex with your dead wife.
Yes.
And I was not aware of that. I was not aware of that. Pardon me?
I said, with the dead. It doesn't have to be a dead wife. Necrophilia is just having sex with a dead person.
Okay.
Dead anything.
The interesting.
They all hate these animals.
My God.
Okay, so it could be. All right. There you go. Equal opportunity deviant. I guess one of the comments that some people use, Liza Jane and Tabitha, is they talk about Sharia being so overwhelming as a way of life, it even tells you which foot to enter the bathroom with and which hand to.
Right.
To deal with what you're doing in the bathroom. Now, is the detail here that Tabitha has given us, there's a 7-hour clock. If that 7-hour clock is still ticking, then it's okay to have sex with a dead wife. I assume at 7:02, we're done. And I'm trying to make people, we want people.
I'm not sure I want to get into too much detail with this.
Think about the evil.
Yes.
I've got two other words that are new to me. If it's okay, I'll get them off my chest.
It's so evil that you have to laugh to shake it off.
Yes.
It's terribly evil. Terribly. I mean, it's twisted.
The next one is pederasty. A word that, again, I'm not overly familiar with. Let's talk a little bit about what pederasty is. Again, there's a link in the article, and you can go off and continue to read that. Well, can we go into just a little bit of detail? I know it's a radio program, 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
tonight,
they allow,
but I think it's important.
They allow sex with infants, and they stress when they say youth, it's usually prepubescent boys. Once the little boy has hair on his chin, it's no longer a viable alternative. So they have to have, if they're going to have with children, it has to be before he matures. Interestingly, yeah.
But this even
because
allows them.
Then it's homosexuality, and if that happens, they throw you off the top of the building.
Good qualifier, yeah.
Yeah.
But this also includes sex with babies. To that point,
absolutely.
As well, right? Yeah.
Do you want me to go into a little detail, just a word or two?
Sure.
Yeah, they would harm the baby, obviously, but what they do is called thighing, T-H-I-G-H-I-N-G.
Right.
And that's allowed, yeah.
It's
so disgusting. Go ahead, Mo.
I just want to get off, not off my chest, but the perfect Mo, part of being married to a six-year-old, from six to nine, I guess the word is consummating, is a nine-year-old thing, but from six to nine, apparently, and I just went to the link and have been reading about it, we're talking about masturbation with a six-year-old child, and the word is thying,
probably.
So you can just figure that out.
Can
so the
you
notion
imagine
that
how
that
damaging
is,
this is to her?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, actually,
it's
I can't.
Well, it's damaging to the other people in the family, the younger and older children. It's just accepted. And so as a child, I would say it would be damaging, of course, to a young girl. I personally think it's damaging to the young boy that is growing up in the midst of all of this. We're going to talk about that more in a bit. But there's a certain mental capacity to deal with, I forgot what the word is, but when your life is so overwhelming that you can't deal with right and wrong, you can't deal with reality, you create, it would just seem to me that this type of family life would produce mental disease. People
absolutely.
Who either can't, go ahead, Tabitha, please. Yep.
Okay, I was just going to say in the next article, it deals with what happens to the child who must hold in his expressions and his feelings, but he's bubbling inside. It's called an iceberg volcano. Or maybe
yeah.
I'm saying it wrong. I'll get to it later. But yeah,
iceberg
the outward
volcano.
Appearance
yeah.
is he's very calm, and inwardly he's burning up, he's bursting, which is why they use fire, from what I gathered also. They deal with fire because they're raging inside. So they've been sending a lot of balloons, explosive balloons over to Israel. They're dealing with fire quite often, burning things, and that's part of the way that they express themselves, the way they feel, the rage inside.
There was a reference also when you read I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
And I apologize, I talk over people, but you gave a list of all the ways that a woman could be taken out of life. You listed a long list of things, from stoning, and all of those were listed because they're all sanctioned. But one of the things that got me, another thing that got me, I didn't know about, is things called stove bursts. And there's a reference in the article. It says about four women per day are murdered in stove bursts in Pakistan by husbands or in-laws who claim the wives' scars caught on fire while they were cooking. Anyway, it's a known way to put a woman out of her misery, take her out of the life. So stove bursts are understood to be another way
to remove
take
a wife
against a woman.
Yeah, yeah. Can I bring up one item as well that she references here?
Please,
you talk
yeah.
about 20,000 women are killed worldwide each year in honor violence. That the UK recorded 2,823 such crimes in 2010. This is just jumped out at me. And I was reading another article just to see if I could get a few more stats before the show. And I found this article about an honor killing court in Houston, Texas. and where the man was killed his daughter's husband, who converted her, who took her away from the family, and she converted to Christianity, and he killed the best friend, and he apparently didn't kill the daughter. But I guess where I was going to go with this was that they had an expert, they called, in this article, an Amy Logan. They claim she's an expert on honor killings. Yet, a few paragraphs later, she says the code of honor runs so deep in their DNA that it can be tough to raise children in the United States with such different value. But she goes on and she says, Islam itself does not condone honor killing. There are many, many Muslims who are against it, and it needs to be separated from Islam. This woman is not an expert on honor killing.
There's something about Islam that Dr. Bill Warner has pointed out. Islam has duality. You can get both sides, to specify both sides at the same time, and it's the way that the Quran was written. It was written peacefully first. But when Muhammad realized he wasn't getting his way and he wasn't attracting enough people to Islam, he became violent. And that's the part of the Quran that is violent. So you can read both sides, and your professor the doctor read the wrong one. She chose the one that she wanted to read, but
yes,
there's both sides and duality.
And that's why we struggle to really prove that we've got an ideology that is so evil. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, if we can't get the media to identify it as the evil ideology that it is, then that's where we're losing this battle.
And the schools as well. There's a lot of propaganda going on in the schools. And that's really awful.
If there's 20,000 honor killings in the world in that period of time, and then we listen for the indictments, of course, there's no indictments. I guess I would make the case that we have honor killings going on in America where we are not really, we're not functioning with indictments either, because we typically, if we even have a perpetrator, it is a single perpetrator. It is not with an understanding and training in Sharia so that we would know that the son who was given the job to go kill his sister or his mother is acting under direct guidance from the father, from the uncle, from the imam. And we do not, as of yet, I'm not aware of indictments of a collection of three or four family members and the imam. So we, as we talked before on the show, we have cases in America, including one in Michigan right now. So we're certainly better than the Islamic countries, which allow this to happen without any recrimination or penalty for the killers. But we're not that far much better, because we're not taking it seriously to get our people trained, so our prosecutors and our investigators know how to indict the four or five other people in a given case who are getting off scot-free. So we actually have three men and women who were walking around who participated in the planning and maybe even the execution of an honor killing, and we're not putting them in jail.
We're
getting close to the
judges who are on the left. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I'm agreeing with you. We do. We have we have evil in the perpetrators, but we also have an evil that's seeping into our own behavior, our own justice system. We're allowing evil to occur. And so, in a sense, we're becoming as evil, or we're on the road to becoming as evil as these people. And we might even feel sorry for the women. We may actually, when we finish the next article, feel sorry for the men. But the bottom line still is, we're seeing evil if we allow ourselves to see it, and it's not really clear what we're doing or what we will do about the evil that is getting more and more pervasive. So, I think we're ready to move on to the next article.
Okay.
Well, the only thing,
Go ahead.
Let me just say one last thing on this article is that you've got it so detailed with actually verses from the Quran and verses from Reliance of the Traveler. So, folks, when you go out and read this, you will see that there are very, very key references that she puts in them. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I have to underscore that I just can't write without proving it. So, yes, I did include the information.
Good.
Okay, I titled the next one Pride of the Jihadi Mother. Latifa Abu Hamidi is a Palestinian mother of six sons who have brought her much acclaim and wealth. Four are serving life sentences for multiple murders. A fifth was martyred while dodging arrest for the murder of an Israeli. And a sixth, at the time of that writing, was on trial for the confessed murder of Israeli Staff Sergeant Ronan Lubarsky. Their mother has earned the title of role model by the Palestinian Authority and an increase to the reward that also already exceeds $1 million. While mothers in the Western civilization take pride in having their children succeed in their career choice, marry, and give them grandchildren to tend and lovingly spoil, Palestinian parents are the result of an honor-shame culture that has perpetuated itself through the centuries to produce these human weapons of mass destruction. Any potential for humanity remains undeveloped. In such a culture, the children are raised and controlled through submission, often covert and unintentional, but they are objectified, disconnected from all human emotion, and related to others as objects. This is a multifaceted term defined by some or all of the following. One is instrumentality, where they are treated as tools for another's purpose. Denied autonomy, where they're under rule and surveillance. Fungibility, which is treating persons as interchangeable with objects such as weapons. Violability, treating persons as violable to be broken and desecrated. Ownership, treating persons as property, and denial of subjectivity, where the child is trivialized for purpose without concern for experiences or feelings. The majority of young girls are severely devalued, as evidenced by the macabre act of female genital mutilation. Yes, mutilation, it's not merely a cut, as Jihad Alinda Sarsour would have us believe. Usually deprived of an education and hence the ability to develop independence, the daughter is shamed by soon having to be completely covered, becoming as invisible and immaterial as her mother, and often married as one of four youngsters to an older man, not of her choosing, which is legalized rape by an adult. Polygamy is integral to a warrior culture that anticipates a male population reduced by perpetual babble. It also allows for no emotional investment in one stable relationship. It is also reasonable to assume that the subconscious animosity for his mother and all maternal figures is why the male cannot express normal tenderness and protectiveness, but instead he develops a dominating sexual interest toward underage children, either gender, a psychiatric disorder. For the devout Muslim, Western dating, courtship, romance, and love are not options, and marriage often becomes a series of rapes alternating with childbirth. In his childhood, the Muslim male has often been affected by what his mother endured at the hands of a tyrannical father, who was also dealing with the rage of his own childhood. The result of his being subjected to shame, ridicule, ostracism, and bullying is that the son develops his own rage at his parents' terrors, and like the daughter, he is compelled to repress his feelings, which is happening. What is happening to these children, as so well defined by counter-terrorist expert Dr. Nancy Hartevelt Cobran, in the maternal drama of the Chechen Jihadi, is a personality best described as a volcanic iceberg. This dangerously fractured psychology is outwardly cold, unresponsive and devoid of empathy, but inwardly boiling with resentment and rage. The Muslim child must also contend with other traumas, those that take place beyond his immediate family, such as learning to handle weapons and behead dolls and small animals in the classroom, and losing friends and acquaintances to violence and death for their political cause. As he grows older, he is taken to witness the torture and killing of large animals en route to their slaughter for the holiday of Eid al-Adha, to hear the sounds of bleating and death, to be splattered with blood, and see the streets run red through the village. Children who generally love animals are traumatized as they inure to sights of cruelty and carnage, and they develop an obsession with weaponry, destruction, and horror at every turn. His personality quiets and self-protects with a lack of empathy, which is the iceberg, but it may suddenly erupt at the slightest provocation, the volcano, not unlike the psychopathic nice neighbor turned serial killer. The male child who was objectified in turn now treats others as objects. The Islamic culture offers no other outlet, no sports, parties, music, or art for his energy and self-expression. There's no dating and courtship stage with the devalued opposite sex in the severely structured Islamic world. There's no development of tenderness, care, or respect. Their high degree of illiteracy, which excludes the rest of the world, and the five times daily prayers, which keeps them focused, offer the only outlet, envy and hate, of females, Jews, Christians, and the West. The elders encourage, teach, and demand revenge and bloodshed to cleanse their honor and relieve their shame. The flawed familial relationships and antisocial behaviors are the springboard for jihadi violence, which is revenge killing, not only against non-Muslims, but frequently against their own women, children, and infants. He unconsciously rages against his fusion with his mother, a self-hatred because he cannot extricate himself from that bond. The Islamic Chechen pledge, Children's Pledge, makes it clear. They sing, "We shall write our words in our blood when we are martyred." Jihad, the political movement, appears 42 times in the Quran and advocates the spread of Islam. It may be accomplished by hijra, which is migration and increasing the Muslim population in a foreign land. It may be by the sword and terrorist attacks until the enemy submits, and it may be forced conversion or surrender. Coburn, the author I mentioned earlier, notes that 95% of the world's terrorist attacks have been perpetrated by Islamic terrorists since 1970. Our role model mother has been abused psychologically, physically, and sexually. Under constant threat, she is used to maintain obedience. The male is charged with guarding the sexuality of the female, the family honor, and the father relinquishes his role to the firstborn son. Should the sister dishonor the family, it is the son who is tasked with taking her life. This is culturally sanctioned domestic violence, revenge, or reactive killing, not unlike terrorists who counterattack in reaction to a socio-political ideological insult. This is what contributes to the shaheed, the martyrdom syndrome in Islam. Coburn said that every 90 minutes an honor killing occurs throughout the world, predominantly in Arab Muslim countries, and more than 1,000 per year in Pakistan. The jihad attacks with rockets and human bombs, the fires, stabbings, kidnappings, and rape continue unabated through the millennia. In their reverse world, where good is evil and evil is good, death is celebrated. The end.
Okay, hello? We're coming back. Yeah, we're coming back. Okay. I was just muting us, but we could hear you more clearly. those words are so important, and that's why we wanted you to read them, so people can understand and listen to them and understand just how the depth of the evilness, the history and perpetuation of the evilness, and why people can do the kind of things they've done. We've had programs before, Tabitha. For example, we had a dramatization of an honor killing. We actually played a documentary about a woman named Banaz, who was a young woman. We actually saw her live because she appeared in a police investigation room trying to get the police to protect her. She kept saying, "They're going to kill me, they're going to kill me." And certainly they did. The documentary is a professional documentary, and it talks about the ways, the detail that the family went into, the mother, the father, the uncle, to actually have her killed or to kill her. And listening to you read this just reminds me of this is what it takes to be in the minds of these people. Can you imagine the 15-year-old boy who killed his mother in Michigan because she wanted a divorce from his father, and what that conversation must have been to get him to the point of pushing her out of the second-story window to her death?
Yeah, but they're raised in the atmosphere so that you and I would not have the same feeling of doing such a thing as they do. I think they're so taken with death, as I said, from toddlerhood on, where they're taught to handle a sword and stab or behead a doll. They're already hardened. And I'm not sure that they feel the same way we do.
I think you're right.
They also have jihadi. They also have jihadi camps for kids.
Right.
So they're getting used to being trained that way, and they look at life differently. Their goals in life are different. The sooner they die, the sooner they'll have peace, and the sooner they'll have their virgins. 72 virgins are promised in the netherworld. And we seek to extend our lives and be healthy and have medicine and betterment for society. It's not the same there.
And that's generational, so that we've got so many generations coming through this system and following through. One of the things that struck me was that, and I got to thinking about a cult. There's been many cults throughout the history, and think about the psychologists that families will bring in, and they will kidnap a child that is in some religious cult to get them to be deprogrammed.
Correct.
So I think it's almost the evil is at a point where you have to break the cycle. But how do you do that with so many? You have to break the cycle to get the first level of generations deprogrammed and actually understanding how evil it really is. That'd be a huge task, but I can't imagine there's not some psychologist out there, psychiatrist, that wouldn't take that on. And I don't know that it would work, but it... What are your thoughts on that?
During the Obama years, they weren't permitted to consider any language that exposed Islam for what it is.
True.
I don't know if they've fixed it since then, but I'm not even sure if the police and any police force will recognize an honor killing, or if a child goes to the policeman and says, "I want you to save me." I think he's honor bound or legally bound to return the child to the kid. To the family. So if we don't have the personnel trained properly, we can't succeed. And if you remember a few New Year's Eves ago, they had a taharush. It's where a lot of men gather around one girl and encircle her so that nobody on the outside can see who's in the middle. And they rape her repeatedly, every one of the men.
Yes.
And she can't be protected. And what happens, someone like Angela Merkel keeps saying, "Come on in, our doors are open, all the Muslims are welcome to come in." I don't know how to change that.
And Macron as well, in France.
Yeah.
But Tabitha, I don't know who fixed the pictures, but In the beginning of the article, The Pride of the Jihadi Mother, that you just read, I'm looking at the picture, and there's a picture of an Islamic woman, of course, in a hijab, and she has her four sons, four of her six sons around her. Before we go in and talk about her sons, let's remember
one.
That... Okay. Yeah. So that's Latifa that you talked about. What I'm thinking about, I'm looking at her. You know, she's a middle-aged woman now with four grown sons, maybe six grown sons. She was that little girl. She was at one point that 6 or 9 or 12-year-old little girl who was sold by her father to an older man, most likely, who then became one of his wives, who then went through the I-take-this-woman discussion that you gave us just a half an hour ago, and she became this battered adult, mentally challenged woman who gave birth to six sons. And in the beginning, I don't want to not remember it, it says four of the six sons are serving life sentences for multiple murders. A fifth was martyred while dodging arrest for the murder of an Israeli. And the sixth is on trial for the confessed murder of Israeli staff sergeant whose name. But the point is that she lives in Palestine. The Palestinian Authority has increased the reward they're giving her to exceed $1 million. So she's received, she and the family, $1 million because she produced six weapons of mass destruction. And I'm guessing she looks like she might be 40 or 50 years old. So 40 years ago, she was a little girl. And she never, I'm not excusing this at all, but she is a product of that system. And that system just continues to produce and produce and produce this set of damaged human beings with psychological or psychiatric problems. And to the extent that they live in another part of the world, that's terrible for them, etc. I think they deal with their lives over there because when they go to the mosque, you know, they're all together, they're all there, they all understand each other. Personally, when they come to Germany or Switzerland or Michigan, I think the pressure is much, much worse. When they go out in Europe or in America and they walk around people who are not like them, people who don't have that mentality, and for that matter, we had a conversation last week about the attraction for Muslim men of light-skinned blonde women. I mean, the contrast here is explosive, even more than the iceberg. The volcanic eruption of the iceberg, in my mind, could be even more aggressive, and that's what we're seeing in the example. You just gave an example about what happens in places where the men encircle the woman. I think all part of that, it might happen in an Arab country, but I think it happens with a vengeance to a non-Muslim girl. Probably couldn't happen to a Muslim girl because she'd be covered, but to a non-Muslim kafir young woman or young girl, it's a sexual crime, but it's also a violent crime.
Right, and you know Malmo, Sweden, used to be a comparatively safe area. It was an area where Christians and Jews lived in harmony, and now everybody's fleeing, and it became almost a completely Islamic city because of the crime. It was called the rape capital of the world.
Yep.
So they're that's how they take over.
Well, I think you
after.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you coined the phrase weapons of mass destruction that that this woman in the story produced six sons that were weapons of mass destruction.
Might have had daughters also.
And they're just as damaged to think about where they're going to go next and the children that are going to be produced from those. It's the generational.
Let's take this home because you have another article that we could at least touch on and we can keep going back to these. But this woman, Palestinian woman, created her weapons of mass destruction with six sons, but she might have had a daughter. And that daughter might have had a daughter, and that daughter might have come to America and might have grown up in Dearborn, Michigan, and might have been elected to Congress, and her name might be Rashida. So Rashida Tlaib is an extension of this conversation. She's a woman. She's in America. She's in the U.S. Congress. She cannot control herself in terms of her hatred of Jews and her her aggressiveness. Obviously, another young girl that was born into a family and probably was genitally mutilated might be the other woman who's in Congress from Minnesota. So we were talking about real people who come out of this system and they're landing not just in on a street in Minneapolis, but they're landing in Congress, and they are geared and they are wound up like a toy to spout the hatred that we've been talking about that's been instilled. So this is a really relevant story to the other article that you have. It's called Assumption of Dignity. And you're in there, you're talking about Rashida and some of her comments about the Holocaust, I think.
Well, she's dangerous too. There are a few of them. There's also the one in Brooklyn, New York, Linda Sarsour. She comes with hate from the Palestinian territory. And this is how they're trained. They're carrying on the hatred that Muhammad has sowed. I don't know what you wanted me to touch upon, but they don't have dignity. She blames everything that happens on Jews because I did explain that it's a shame-blame culture. So they don't take the blame for anything they've done. Anything they have done, they'll blame on somebody else, and that absolves them of their guilt. And that is what Rashida is doing as well. They don't want their own state, yet they claim that they're being taken off their land, which, of course, it isn't their land. That archaeology has proven the Bible is a historic document that proves who was there first. But this is another method of conquest. They can conquer in many ways. One is to push you out of their city and then spread out, push you out of your state and eventually out of your country. People are fleeing all through Europe. The ones who aren't are, I think, Hungary and Poland have shut their doors to foreigners, and so far they're leading good lives now. It's peaceful there. Anywhere else, it's not. I'm sorry to say it, but I don't want to share our country, America, with people who don't want us and who want to take over our country.
Amen on that. Amen on that. I'm right there with you, Tabitha.
I knew you would be.
Tabitha, to connect to that point about the devastation that's happening in Europe and people leaving, about a month and a half ago, we had an opportunity to actually show an early version of a documentary that is available now called Homelands. It's Katie Hopkins from the United Kingdom. Called Homelands.
What was the title? Okay.
Homeland. H-O-M-E-L-A-N-D-S. And it included in that conversation is the story of 8,000 Jews who have left a part of Paris. And fortunately, they have a place to go. Katie visits with Jewish people who have come to Israel and been welcomed. And they did leave. And more Jews are basically seeing exactly what's happening. A very sad comment, I'll just repeat. One of the Jewish women says that they talk about September 1939, and that there were Jews in Europe, but there were optimists and pessimists. I think I got it right. The pessimists ended up in Los Angeles with a swimming pool, and the optimists
were killed.
The gas chamber. So, yeah.
That's
so
right.
I guess what I'm getting at is there's a massive
the Christians
movement.
Don't. Right, but the Christians have no place to flee. They have to stand up for their country.
Right.
Exactly.
Really
well, and I think the other thing is what's happening, and Katie is a person in England who's asking the question, where does she go? Where does her family go? As major parts of the country are gone. So I would say that's relevant in America. And when we had Katie on 2 months ago, we talked about that. Where will somebody from a Sharia dense community go? Where will somebody, at what point will there be an indicator that it's time to consider moving? because my government, my sheriff, my police chief, my governor is intentionally blind and not going to do anything to protect me. Frankly, if I live in Farmington Hills, Michigan, down the street from the honor killing, I'm a man or a woman, I'm not safe. There are murderers down that street out in the open who are not going to be indicted, not going to be punished for their crimes, and they're going to only be emboldened. For that matter, if I have a child in West Bloomfield, Michigan, and he goes to the public school, he will watch and see a 12-year-old boy disappear for 20 minutes every day at the same time to go into the public school prayer room for the Muslim child, remembering that that Muslim child will say the prayer. You just, I think, referred to it in the article 34 times, their head touches the ground. Those prayers are actually inclusive of Quranic phrases, et cetera, that are basically calling, slurring people who happen to be Jewish and, you know, calling them names, et cetera. So here's a 12-year-old boy and Christian. A 12-year-old boy comes out of the prayer room, walks down the hall, sits next to a boy who happens to be wearing a yarmulke. We got a problem. And at some point, that Jewish community in the United States of America, in Michigan, is probably going to get to decide it's time to move to keep my children safe. So we're losing that battle, and I think when we understand, and that's why I think your articles are so important, Tabitha, you're giving us food for thought. We cannot walk away from the words that you use to describe this evil. We can't really bury this. It's so
Mo,
clear.
Mo, if I may interject something. If
Please.
We walk away, Jews and Christians alike, and leave the place that we lived in, it's called conquest. That's how they get the land. They're trying to push the Jews out of Israel, the French out of France, the Germans out of Germany, the Swedes out of Sweden, and so forth. And the minute the original people are forced out, no matter how it's done, whether it's of their own volition or fleeing, you know, at a moment's notice, that's called conquest. That's how all the Islamic countries became Islamic. They weren't before. Islam took over. Well, Muhammad, I think, began with Mecca in 624 A.D. Before then, there was no Islam. But the countries that are now Islamic were once not Islamic. Those people are gone because they were conquered. And we can't let it happen now. I hope we can't let it happen now. But that's how it's done. They scare you enough to, you know, that they'll take over.
Yes, agreed. It's winning by fear. It's winning by conquest. You're absolutely right. And we have to stand up against it, no matter
Absolutely.
How evil it is. And that's why you do what you do, and your writings are so right on in terms of what is going on around us, in terms of what we need to know. You are very specific with the linkage links that you have in your articles. They are so clear and so concise, describing the evil that's happening. And we are very, very blessed to have you on with us tonight. The assumption of dignity that references Rashida Tlaib, I mean, I cringe thinking about her being a woman. You write how she made a proclamation that she feels more Palestinian than American. So what is she doing? How can she abide by the Constitution? How can she?
Absolutely.
She wrapped herself in a Palestinian terrorist flag at her victory party.
And she took her vows on a Quran, not on a Christian or Jewish Bible.
Right.
And
it's interesting.
If that was allowed, then yeah.
It's interesting to hear. Go ahead.
I'd love
I'm sorry.
To be able to get my. That's okay. It's hard because of the timing, but I'd love to get my book out to people who are actually involved in the law to understand what's going on. I have a mayor in my city who will go unnamed, who doesn't know anything. He's totally ignorant, and he would love this to be a sanctuary city.
Hmm.
Doesn't understand anything. And he's not alone, obviously. He's not the only one.
Well, you mentioned a little bit earlier how we have to get our law enforcement trained to understand it, to understand what the crimes are that they're seeing with these small children. If they mm-hmm. don't understand it, just like you said, they return the small child back to the family. If there's a runaway situation because of either FGM threats or because of honor killing, the law enforcement are so critical in this, in understanding it. And that's one of the things we provide. We have an offer out to every law enforcement that we can reach to identify what the problems are and what they need to know to understand it so they don't. I mean, even to the point of social workers and teachers, it's so critical for them to be able to be a source for these children that are needing some adult assistance to get away from what could be their death. You're absolutely right on that. And so we've been trying to reach out to law enforcement for quite a while and get them trained in it, but they turn a blind eye on us as well.
But you're fighting also the left.
Yeah.
It's really a double-edged sword. The left is protecting, they're telling our population that the police are no good. Our children are learning to disrespect the police. So they're our protection, and we're told now that they can't help us, or they're afraid. In some cases, they're afraid to walk into the cities that are almost completely Islamic at that point.
Yeah.
So they're held back, which is a terrible thing. We're losing with this president. I'm hoping it'll be restored more, but he's also being stopped so often that it's disheartening.
Yeah. Agreed.
While we're giving out our acknowledgments of pure evil, I think we need to extend the pure evil to include the left, to include the people that accept this behavior, this approach to men and women that you described so brilliantly this evening, Tabitha. This evil is acceptable, and people are willing to collaborate with this evil. That would be people like Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic Party, and the United States Chamber of Commerce, and the Republican Party that supports the Chamber of Commerce. There's a real small subset of Christians and Jews who want very much to live according to Moses and Jesus, and who are judgmental. They understand how important it is to be judgmental and to say, oh, that's good, and you know what, that's evil, and I'm going to tell the truth. What we talked about tonight is pure evil. So for the Christian pastors and priests and archbishops and popes who will embrace this evil by collaborating with them, by going to interfaith meetings with them, by excusing them, by not calling out evil, they are, in my opinion, associating with evil, and therefore we have to put them into the evil column. In some ways, they are just as evil. They are allowing this evil. They've actually weakened Judaism and weakened Christianity so that they're not strong enough to stand up. And the versions for some Jews and some Christians is so watered down and so non-judgmental that, you know, we'll just get along, go along to get along. I'll forgive your sin. You forgive my sin. Oh, by the way, there are no absolutes. So this evil that we talked about tonight sadly, beautiful words about evil needs to remind us that the evil is around us. It's only for the people we're calling the remnant. These are Jews and Christians who want to be true to their biblical teachings, to the Old Testament, New Testament. Those are the only folks holding on and having conversations like the ones we're having tonight, to call out evil and to ask people to be as good as they possibly can by coming out and taking a stand against this evil. So the action items, we typically talk about action items, and one of the action items, frankly, for our audiences would be to get these articles, watch for the podcast on the United West, the Sharia Crime Stoppers page, watch for the links that I think will be put in there. Go back and read the articles. Again, I take this woman and Pride of the Jihadi Mother, An Assumption of Dignity, and The Rage of Islam, all articles by our guest, Tabitha quarrel tonight, use those articles to get people to think and to talk about things. And just an observation, let's try to pick up a little bit of positiveness. We did see a situation over the last weekend where there are emerging governments or people are voting in Europe in the direction of a kind of guy like Donald Trump. So you had progress,
yes,
by the nationalists and the populists in Europe. That's encouraging and probably relatable to the stir that Donald Trump has caused in the world. So there is hope for optimism. But keep in mind, if Donald Trump is not the president of the United States in 2021, if something occurs where Jews and Christians who could vote don't vote for Donald Trump, or they assume it's taken care of, or they underestimate the amount of fraud that will happen, if we are without Donald Trump in 2021, I'm not sure what Bibi Netanyahu does. I'm not sure what Salvini in Italy does. I'm not sure what the people that are trying to emerge, standing up for their own cultures, for their own borders, for their own economic success, without Donald Trump leading the last best hope for the world, we could be in trouble. So we need to dedicate ourselves, when we see this much evil in the world, we need to dedicate ourselves to spend all of our energy between now and November of 2020 to make sure, no matter what else happens locally, that at a national level, we have a person as strong as Donald Trump to lead this country.
Yeah, can I add something to it? And you're brilliant. Thank you so much. But there are two wonderful groups that I recommend people look into. I don't know if they're in your neighborhood necessarily, but you can look them up. One, of course, is Brigitte Gabriel's Act for America. These are a bunch of fighters, but more than that, they tell you what's going on. They keep you informed. When I joined them, I didn't know half as much as I do now because of them. They have some wonderful speakers. Another woman is Lori Cardoza Moore, who heads, and she began the group called PJTN, Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. She's a wonderful Christian woman. I can't speak highly enough of her and her work, and she wants to go into the schools and take the anti-Semitism and the socialism out of the schools, because they're ruining the children. And there's no one to stop them, unfortunately, not yet.
Yeah.
I tried, but one person can't do much. So if the parents can get together, the parents are really afraid, because they're afraid if they speak up, something's going to happen to the child, or his grades won't be good, or they'll be failed, or the children will beat him up or bully him. So I can almost understand why the parents might be reluctant to do something. But if they all banded together, there would be more strength in numbers. Otherwise, try PJTN, Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, and she can guide you. And you can find these two groups online.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll be sure to put them in with the podcast as well.
Ibiza, let me mention to our audience and to you that you mentioned Lori Cardoza Moore.
Cardoza Moore.
Yes. She will be our guest on our Tuesday webinar on Tuesday, June the 25th. We've been having a series of webinars that include the enemies within the church. We've had the enemies within the Roman Catholic Church, another episode on the enemies within the Evangelical Church, and we've had one on the enemies within the Jewish faith. We had Rabbi John Hausman, we had Brenda Arthur, we had Janet Levy, we had Bev Goldstein.
Oh, I know Janet Levy, yeah. Not personally,
and so Bev
Goldstein, I didn't know the other names. Okay.
Well, but I'm just sharing with you, because of that progression, the next time we talk about the enemy, the next time we talk about the evangelicals, we will have Lori Cardoza Moore on the 25th of June on a webinar at 7 o'clock. And with her will be Michael Goldstein, who is the legal counsel for Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. Michael is the attorney for Lori and also the director for the Ohio chapter. What they do is basically reach out and bring evangelical Christians to support Jews in America, around the world, and, of course, to support Israel directly. And they actually broadcast around the world through large numbers of people, specifically connecting biblical teaching and unifying and strengthening the Jewish and Christian relationship. So you've actually mentioned someone that we agree with 100%, and she will be with us on June the 25th.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. She's a good speaker. She's terrific and a darling lady. I have a lot of respect for her.
Great.
Well, why don't we wrap up? Do you have any other final comments? We certainly appreciate your being with us tonight. And why don't you tell us a little bit about
you?
Mention the book one more time, please.
Okay. It's Confronting the Deception. It's really an inexpensive book, but it's a huge a lot of material in the book. As I mentioned, 822 endnotes. It's about an inch thick, and it's easy reading. And what's good is they're essays, so you can put it down after a page and a half and pick it up another time without wondering what you remember, because they're all separate essays. And the reason they came about is this was to refute everything that I saw that I found objectionable. So I start with Islam. There are three sections: Islam, academia, and the media. And I think by concentrating that way, you get the full impact of what's going on with Islam, and then how it's being handled in the schools, and then, of course, in the media. I don't know what else to say except I hope you'll read it. I think you'll be intrigued by all the information. I did a lot of research and a lot of reading, so you won't have to buy all the books I did, and it's all in one place. And I'm wearing glasses now. No, I was wearing them for a while. I thought I'd throw that in.
No, this is great.
And compilation. Yeah, you compiled so much value for us.
And if you want to give anybody my email address, pardon me?
Go right ahead, yep.
Yes, it's a compilation. If you want to give anyone my email address, you're welcome to do so. It's
okay.
UN for Never, SOS, T as in Peter, IRO. It's pronounced Un Suspiro. It means the sigh, SIGH, in Spanish, and it's a beautiful piece of music by Franz Liszt. So it's unsuspiro@sbcglobal.net. And if you have any questions about the book, about the readings, or anything I said this evening, you're more than welcome to give me a buzz on the internet.
Excellent. And it's available out on Amazon. Anywhere else? I mean, I'm sure it's in other bookstores as well, probably, right?
No, it's not. It's just Amazon.
Just Amazon. Okay.
And, yeah. And one day I hope to put it on audio, but so far I don't know how to go about it, so I'm getting some information from a friend. And
oh,
I'll pursue it that way.
That would be excellent. You did such a fine job tonight reading your articles. We just are very appreciative of that. It just had
Thank
a major
you.
Impact with your voice with the articles.
Thank you so much. I was honored to be on your shows. I do appreciate it very much.
Okay.
And
great.
Thank you to the audience for paying attention.
Right. We appreciate them as well. Eliza Jane, do you have any closing comments? I've got one administrative item, and then we're going to play our little music and get off. any final comments, Eliza?
No. One of the things that I know to be, like I said in the beginning, she just writes so well, and she writes for numerous websites. Just Google her name, and you will see that she shows up everywhere. And one of the things that I feel very blessed for is that she allows me to also post on the United West her articles, original articles. So we've developed a nice friendship, and it's so appreciative of that, Tabitha. I hope to continue that. And anytime you've got an article, send it my way, and I'm happy to get it posted as quickly as I can.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's very nice of you. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to say goodnight. Before we do, we will be here next Friday night, as every Friday night, and I want to give you an update. About 3 months ago, we did an evening with Liz Ure, who's the founder of NFGM Today. We talked about the terrible life of women under Islam and children, and, of course, female genital mutilation is an atrocious practice that is sanctioned. And so we're going to have another show next Friday night on FGM. Liz Ure will bring with her actually a courageous congressman who is courageous enough to speak out about FGM. We'll keep you posted during the week with some more details, but tune in next week for an update on that. And with that, we'll thank you all for listening and wish you a good night.
Good night, everybody.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that. Shining sea, from Detroit down.